Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to Unlimited Realities. I'm your host, Lisa Zimmer, and I'm so pleased to give you a very special guest, a woman I truly admire and respect, best-selling author Oriah Mountain Dreamer, who has written The Invitation and is in the process of writing her new book, The Choice. And Oriah, thank you so much for joining us today.
My pleasure, Lisa.
We're going to talk a little bit about our summer solstice, which we're in right now. And let's talk a little bit. Some people know what solstice is, but a lot of people don't know the energetic level of what summer solstice seems to bring in for so many of us. And I know I was just telling you, I'm feeling such a lull. such a chill factor going on with me right now. And I don't know if it's like my excuse or if it's actually, the energy of the solstice. So let's talk about what is summer solstice and what does it mean and bring in for people?
Sure. Well, you know, most people know it is the time of the longest light, the summer solstice is. And, of course, on the other half of the world, they're having the winter solstice. So they're having the time of the longest dark, the longest night right now. And
okay.
So what's interesting about this and a little confusing is that I think when we're at the winter solstice, we get that it's a kind of very inward-turning time. A time of dreaming, a time of kind of setting intentions and things like that in a kind of dreamy sort of way, in an inward, introspective way. And the summer solstice, you would assume, was the opposite of that because it is, in nature, of course, a time of blossoming and blooming. Now, the thing that runs kind of counter to this is that we don't live, most of us don't live close to the earth. We're not out harvesting crops or whatnot. So
right.
What happens for us, in particularly the in Northern Hemisphere, is that this is holiday time for people. We're just starting here the summer, and many people take off from work, which is great. I'm all for holiday time, and heaven only knows I live in Canada where there's a small enough window of warm weather. But we really want to take advantage of that. But, you know, from an energetic and spiritual perspective, it is a place of considering where we want our energy to flow, even if we're not feeling. We tend to translate high energy in this culture into high productivity in the external, which it could be, but it isn't necessarily like that. It's also a kind of natural unfolding, a natural and rapid unfolding. I mean, if you're in a place where things are growing right now, you've just seen them overnight go to full bloom.
Mm-hmm.
And so for us, the sun in particular, when we get that long day, has to do with a kind of inner fire, which is traditionally associated with the third chakra, the solar plexus. And I have to tell you that it's only been recently that it really twigged with me that it was the solar plexus, as in sun, as in fire. I mean, seriously, all these years I've been saying solar plexus and not making that connection. So it is a place to kind of tap into that central fire in ourselves, which is commonly associated with very deep desires of the soul, but also with, you know, intention setting and access to our will, how we want to use the energy that we have. And looking at where we have choice, where we seem to run counter to our intentions, where we seem to be able to step right up and make those intentions go or come into alignment, which is what I would say this is really about, with a
right.
much larger wholeness. It's like bringing our little pen light into alignment with the sun.
And that's exactly, that's really well put. That's exactly how I'm feeling. I just feel so, you know, as you were saying, winter is the inward time. I'm feeling this is my inward time for me. And very much, you know, getting in touch with really just what I want to do. And it seems a little selfish, but I'm okay with that for right now. It seems to be a time for a lot of people right now that they're going through, they're feeling something, they're not quite sure what they're feeling, and yet they seem to be pushing themselves when in reality they may want to just reflect more.
Mm-hmm.
Do you find that in the summertime, there is in the summer solstice for us in this hemisphere, that people generally check out more, or generally, start to detach from what has been crazy or chaotic in their life. Their work structures, their home life gets simpler. Or is it just this time that we're going inward and yet not really recognizing what we need? Is there a conflict of interest here that we're going through?
I do think, because in North America at least, because we often look at the summer as a time to take a bit of a break and we step out of our usual routine for a short period or longer periods, encouraged to do so by the incredible heat, for instance, that we're having right now here.
Right.
That you know, interruption in the usual routine does lend itself to a kind of reflection. But it's a little different reflection than the wintertime one, which is a kind of inward dreaming. This is a sort of inward focusing, a kind of inward exploration, in a sense. So we do have that energy moving, but it does help us to sort of unhook a little from the regular routine. Now, I can't help but think here also about people whose children are going to be off school, you know, for 2 months or more, who do find their usual routine interrupted, but may have less, you know, alone time than they've had at other times.
Yes.
If they're caretaking the kids. Although even that, because being with your kids and doing things with them can also reconnect us to old desires we left behind that we had when we were children, you know. So, again, it can be a kind of active introspection where we're not kind of going into the cave so much, but we
right.
are interrupting the regular routine. I do want to say a word about the selfish thing. This is such a struggle. You know, we have on the one hand this culture that emphasizes the individual and individual freedom. And on the other hand, as soon as somebody starts to do some real introspective work with themselves, they are susceptible to people using words like narcissistic, navel-gazing, wallowing. You know, none of
mm-hmm.
these could ever be used in a positive way. I need to
write.
And I find that intriguing that we want everybody to sort of take responsibility for their lives and whatnot. And if they attempt to do that by doing some very critical work at looking at what really is driving me, you know, I say I
right.
want to do this thing and I do something else, then, you know, there's a kind of, well, that's enough navel gazing. And
right.
I have to assume that we have some fear then. I think the culture as a whole has a fear that if people stopped and started looking, you know, saying to themselves before they reach to their credit card, do I need this?
Uh-huh.
Do I really even want this on a very deep level, or is it just more stuff? Am I moving away from my anxiety by buying or eating or moving or, you know, whatever it is?
Right.
The whole structure starts to crumble a little if enough people do that, because it's based, in a sense, on keeping us moving and consuming. So I would say it's actually not only not selfish, it is essential for our contribution to the collective.
Yes.
To bring what's unconscious to consciousness, because we're a menace to ourselves and others to the degree where we have no idea about what's actually driving and directing us.
That is so eloquent. Well put, Oriah. That's really beautiful, because, that's exactly how I feel. I make no apologies when I go into that state. But, and luckily my kids have adjusted to my inward times.
Mm-hmm.
But this is a time, you know, this is a time where I work from my home, so I've got two teenage boys in the house.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a different year for me because they're very, very headstrong kind of individuals. I don't know where they got that from.
Yeah, I can't
and
imagine.
And yet, they're also very witty and funny. But it's a different vibe this summer for me. And so I have been finding myself, okay, you know, I've adjusted my work schedule. I've adjusted it to allow more play time and actually not doing as many shows this summer just so I can take off and vacation with them and things. But it's an interesting parallel that I'm seeing. I'm seeing people who are kind of going through a lot of struggles in the last 2 months. And I don't know if it's that there is such pressure from society and culture culture to do, and they're feeling their own guilt in kind of like adjusting their life and their schedule to kind of shut down. Or, you know, so shutting down and going within is so necessary. I mean, it's necessary for all of us at some point. But this is a really good excuse to do it, I find, summertime.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
Not that I ever look for an excuse or anything, because I just call it and I do it and then, you know, let the chips fall where they may. But that's my role. That's how I work. That's, I wouldn't recommend it necessarily for everyone. You're talking about the solar plexus. Let's talk a little bit about how that really is our core barometer on some level when we are sensing things and feeling things, because it's such an intuitive center for our physical form. Mm-hmm. And you brought that in regard to our summer solstice. So let's talk a little bit about our solar plexus.
So, can we do a little meditation?
Certainly. The floor is yours.
There? Yeah.
Certainly.
So let's just take a minute and kind of, what we're talking about is the area physically, really from the navel up to the bottom of the first rib kind of thing, or up into the breastbone. So it's that whole area in there. Some traditions emphasize more down towards the navel, others more up towards what I would traditionally call a solar plexus under the breastbone there. So folks who are listening and just want to take a couple of minutes, and it helps to, if you're sitting somewhere, to sit up as straight as possible, and to take just three deep breaths, really feeling your feet on the floor. I don't know if people hear this on the car, but obviously you should not do this portion if you drive. and just let your eyes close gently, and just take three really deep inhales and exhales as if you could breathe in and out from your feet, up from the ground, up to that solar plexus area, filling and down. And with each exhale, just letting the body drop down a little, feeling the weight of your body in the chair, feeling your shoulders drop and your jaw loosen. And just gently scanning the body for any places where there's a tightness or tiredness or tension. Breathing in a little spaciousness to those places and just letting go. And then imagining the sun far above us, brilliant and warm, doesn't matter what kind of time of day it is for you, because the sun is always out there, even when we can't see it. And breathing that light of the sun in through the top of your head and down to the solar plexus, that area between the navel and the breastbone, the bottom of the breastbone. Feeling that sort of liquid yellow, orange, gold energy coming in there. And like a kind of bellows igniting and fanning that ball of fire, that inner sun that's in you. Feeling that ball of light and energy may help to put your hand on your solar plexus. This is the place where our inner fire resides. That which fuels our intentions and our will. The place where we can come into alignment with a much greater will and wholeness that we participate in. Just letting that get as large as it is, not forcing it. If it's growing, letting it suffuse your whole body with that warmth and energy of the fire in you. And then just keeping one part of your attention on whatever is there, whatever your experience of that solar plexus has been, and it may be a ball of fire. It may have been a blankness. There may not have been an experience of anything. That's okay. Whatever it is, just leaving one part of our attention there and opening your eyes, feeling your feet on the floor, and again, taking a breath in and out through the soles of your feet into the earth. So the thing about will is that we tend to think of it in this culture as a really kind of driving force. We call it willpower.
Mm-hmm.
And we tend to think of it as efforting and discipline and you know, making effort, being disciplined about something are not bad things. But what happens a little bit is we get set up where we try over and over again sometimes to do things, some really things we genuinely intend, and they can be very simple things. One of my battles in my life at a certain stage was going to bed early enough.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing was stopping me from doing this, you understand. This was well after my children were grown. I could go to bed whenever I liked. And I would roam around and do other things. And this was not good for my health. It also didn't allow me to wake up at a time that I know is really the best time of the day for me, which is early morning.
Mm-hmm.
And when I did it, when I sort of got myself to bed at a time that I knew would work for me, I felt much better, and yet I still found myself not doing it regularly. So this is the kind of thing we all find all the time, right? We try something. It really works. It's lovely. We want more of it, and then we don't do it.
Right.
So, and the tendency is to clamp down, is to go, I just have to be more disciplined about this, whether it's eating, exercising, a spiritual practice, whatever it is. And sometimes that'll work for a while. There is, you know, we can kind of, with the ego's will, we can clamp down for a while and make something happen. But it almost seems inevitable that something is going to happen. And in some ways, if we can be easy with that, if we can kind of go, oops, need to go back to that. But usually when we're doing it from that place, we're not easy about it. We're like, this is what I have to do.
Right.
So the question is, how do we do something else? How do we tap into, and let's assume right now that we're not talking about, because one of my first questions when I don't do something that I intend is to ask myself, do I really want to do it?
Mm-hmm. Right.
Because sometimes we intend things that, you know, we think we should do, we think are good things, we've been taught are good things, but we don't really want to do it at all. In which case, you know, give it up. Stop making the resolution.
Right.
Stop torturing yourself. But often it is something like, and my example of this going to bed early was one of them. I really did know that this worked for me and was frustrated when I didn't do it. So my experience is that we have to bring two qualities to this kind of situation. One is a kind of gentle curiosity, and the other is kindness,
right.
a sort of tenderness to it as opposed to a clamping down. So the gentle curiosity isn't a kind of driven, I have to figure this out so I can get it right. That's not a gentle curiosity.
Right.
It's sort of, what I started to do was watch really carefully to see what happened in the evening. At what point did I sort of start to go unconscious or start to make excuses not to do what I knew was good for myself? And why would I do that? And what I discovered was there was a certain anxiety that I hadn't noticed that was coming up in my body, a kind of restlessness, a pulling away from something. Now, sometimes I could explore that a little and I could feel how it related to things in my past, say my childhood and what happened in the evenings, for instance. But a lot of the time, it was more amorphous than that, you know. And there is a kind of free-floating anxiety that is sometimes part of being human. Heaven only knows in times when there's economic woes and other kinds of concerns, it can be a collective free-floating anxiety. All you need to do is turn on the news. You can have a free-floating anxiety.
Right.
You know, so I didn't spend, I mean, I did look at what this might be related to and kind of explored that a little in my unconscious and in my past, but I also just decided to try and respond to that the way I would to an anxious child.
Okay.
You know, we don't when we're talking about these things, about what's good for us, we don't let a five-year-old stay up till midnight.
Right.
Because it wouldn't be kind to do that for the child or for us.
Yeah, right.
Or for the next day, right? So instead of kind of clamping down and going, you've got to go to bed, stop, you know, fooling around and doing other stuff, just get there, it would be more of a kind of gentle gearing down, the way you would with a child, starting earlier, not being on the internet, taking myself to bed, but with a kind of the way you would encourage a child, because this is good for them.
Right.
The way you would try to make this as pleasant an experience as possible, and with some gentleness and some mercy and tenderness towards the anxiety that's arising. You know, it's okay that there's nothing happening right now that in any way is threatening, that you've done your full day, you've done the best you can, and now you need to rest so you can bring the best of who you are to the next day. So I think this is generally true, that with the places where we're kind of frustrated with ourselves, we need to bring this kind of gentle curiosity as well as a kind of kindness to ourselves if we really want to do the things. And some of the curiosity is what really does work for me. You know, I have friends who are night people. Going to bed early and getting up at 5:30 does not work for them. That works for me right now.
Right.
May not
right.
work that way in 10 years, you know.
Right.
So a kind of, I mean, I'm infinitely curious. I'm not infinitely kind, unfortunately, but I am infinitely curious. So the way I can sort of get myself, in a sense, to be kind is to tap into my curiosity, to really start wondering, instead of chastising myself, what's going on here? What's going on in my body? What feelings are arising? What background thoughts are arising? Not the ones I'm having in the forefront, but that are behind that are maybe berating me, or, you know, who knows what. Could be pretty much anything.
Right. Now, in our self-talk, because mm-hmm. most initial self-talk with ourselves is never as kind
no.
to ourselves as we are most times to others, strangers. You know, so and often we need to learn how to talk to ourselves. Often
yeah.
we need to, you know, like you brought up the solar plexus. That's a great tool to use. And by the way, that was an incredible meditation. It's so much more powerful for me when someone talks me through it than when I talk myself.
I know. Yes, me too.
That was great. I want to get back to something that you said in that too. But, you know, how can we learn to communicate to ourselves with more compassion? And you said to be curious, and that's a wonderful way to look at how we talk to ourselves in
yeah.
our curiosity, instead of, like you said, you know, chastising ourselves, because that for many of us, myself especially, I'm including here, easy for me to chastise myself. So
yeah.
you know, when I'm not fulfilling something that I feel I should have accomplished today, or I'm being my perfectionist self, or I'm being, you know, hurry, got to get this done.
Yeah.
So easy to fall into that.
Yeah.
And can we catch ourselves? How do we pull ourselves back out of it? Should we just walk away, realign later? You know, what are some great aspects we can bring to the forefront here for those of us who really struggle with ourselves?
Yeah. And you know, how we respond to that voice when we do catch it varies depending on where we are, what kind of energy we've got. Sometimes we just need to say, thanks for sharing, but no.
I
you
like
know,
that.
And sort of shut it down. But one of the things I'm experimenting more with is not shutting it down, but watching it.
Right.
It's kind of going, wow, what the heck is driving that? Because there will be often a kind of imperative authority behind that voice. So one of the things that helps us a little, even to be gentle towards that voice, is to consider that it usually was established very young as a survival mechanism.
Okay.
Because that voice usually says what it says with such authority, whatever it's talking about, it feels like life and death to it.
Right, right.
Right? Which is, of course, crazy. It can be about the silliest thing, and suddenly
yes.
it's life and death. Right?
Right.
So, I mean, this. Why would this be so disproportional? And my own sense of it for myself, and as I've done a lot of exploration, is that this goes back to things I would tell myself as a child unconsciously, that I, you know, with my mother and father's voice, but also an effort to avoid being in trouble.
Right.
You know, we know that children do not survive if they don't attach to a primary caregiver. We don't exist in isolation. And if the primary caregiver is a perfectionist, is driven by their own demons, which, of course, how could they not be in many ways,
right.
Then we're going to start learning and internalizing the voice so we're not on the receiving end of their demons.
Aha.
So it's a survival strategy. Now, when you're a child, because you don't have a, first of all, you really have to attach to this person. And second,
right.
you don't have a lot of physical power. I mean, they can pick you up and put you in the bed, you know. So
right.
so it's a reality. It's not a reality now. So that voice that was once a protector, trying to, you know, just figure out a way around the landmines in our birth home possibly,
right.
is now becomes a persecutor. Because
uh-huh.
it's not making a distinction between then and now, right?
Right.
And it may never. That's the thing. It may never make a distinction, that particular aspect of our psyche. If it gets started really early, almost pre-personality,
okay.
and a kind of archaic energy, not even, you know, sort of pre-archetypal, pre-consciousness kind of thing, then it will always have a life and death sense. Now, what we can do, I mean, in Jungian terms, they would say this is a complex. And as we learn to recognize it and not give over to its energy, it gets smaller and smaller. It loses energy.
Right,
it's using
right.
up a whole pile of energy in our psyche, right?
Right.
So as we learn to recognize it and watch it, and, you know, there are lots of ways we can explore this when we have the time. We can actually engage in a bit of a conversation, which I'll sometimes do on the page. You know, what is it you're so frightened of? What if
right.
I don't get anything more done today? You know, and if we really let it roll, it'll have an answer to that.
Right, right. Because my inner scolder has gotten much mellower, I will say. It
yeah.
is like, you know, it'll come in a bash, and I'll say, but why? You know, like, what is this something that's mandatory? Is there a life or death situation in regard to me doing this? And if there
yeah.
is not, which 99.9% there isn't, yeah, it waits till tomorrow.
Yeah. And it will often be a really young voice, and sometimes it needs to hear directly that part of that you know, the sense of, if I don't get all this done today, I'm going to die, is
right.
a lie. It's just a lie. It's a lie based on a very real feeling as a child that if we didn't meet certain expectations, we'd be annihilated.
Amen.
So
yeah.
So it's not that that experience wasn't true. And it may have been really true, depending on our background, but it's not now. And I don't want to dump on parents here. This wasn't something we just got from our parents. We got it all over the place, the culture,
right.
you know, everything, what it means to be good, to be honest, to be, you know, whatever it is, all of the values that we were taught. And to just start gently unpackaging that a little. And as I say, this really depends on the situation. There are times I'll just say, yes, I know, but it's okay. I'm going to do this anyway. It'll be okay. You know, a kind of reassuring sort of thing.
Right.
Because sometimes it really is like a frantic kid, and you don't start talking a frantic 3-year-old out of what they're feeling. You know,
right.
you rub their back, you say, it'll be okay. It's all right. I'm right here. We're going to do this anyway. You know.
Right. Right.
So again,
breathe.
A little, you know, right. You know, tell me what's happening. Yeah, that kind of thing. You know, so both the gentle curiosity and some kindness.
Yes.
Even to that voice that feels incredibly unkind, can disarm it. You know, it just loses energy.
And it loses energy the more mindful you are of that voice, would you say?
Yes.
So,
I would agree.
So when it comes up, you can say, okay, here's the voice, and we can dialogue with this voice, and we can actually, you know, question what information's coming through. We don't have to just say, okay, there's that voice, I must obey. We
right.
can say, hey, there's that voice, yeah, it's nudging me, not really feeling it.
Right.
You know? So,
right. And the other thing about it, we may be reactive to the voice, right?
Yes.
Like, oh, my
yes.
God, I can't believe the voice is here again. You know, when am I going to stop, you know, chastising myself? Now we're chastising ourselves for chastising ourselves. You see the problem.
Right, right.
So one of the things is that, and so there's kind of there's a thing in tandem happening, you know, that's possible here, which is both a spiritual perspective and a psychological perspective, okay? And so from the spiritual perspective, all of it is just experience. It's what's arising in the moment, the voice that's arising, my reaction to it, my awareness of it, whatever to whatever minuscule degree that may be, you know?
Right.
And if I have developed And this does take practice. If I have developed a practice that helps me be with whatever arises as neutrally as possible, but with curiosity, so really inquiring into where does that voice feel like it is in my body and am I reacting in my body to it? The wonderful thing about whatever is arising is that if we go down into it, and this can be for three breaths on the bus, you understand? So I'm not necessarily talking, although it's easier to do three breaths on the bus with this if you've done some morning practice where you know where that place is and you've returned to it on a regular basis. And so with some curiosity, and my own experience is, whenever I do that, it takes me through to a place that's very neutral in a sense. It's the ground of being. And by neutral, I don't mean that it has, it's very non-neutral in the sense of being very life-giving, but it's a kind of vastness that can hold it all, including that voice. And the wonderful thing is you don't have to be feeling a particular way to use your experience to do that centering, to go there. Whatever's arising, if it's anxiety, then explore the anxiety. Does it change? Is it always the same?
Right.
And, you know, and so it doesn't matter what's arising. Now, what will happen is, you know, in the moment, sometimes we'll have this experience of this vastness, and we think, oh, I got it, you know. And it's a bit of a shock if the voice arises again, which it's probably going to, you know. And so the psychological piece of this is sometimes we do need to do the work of going back and looking at what are the real obstacles psychologically, the wounding, the shaming, the places in our life, because shaming is a big one, and usually that's what that
right.
voice is trying to do. It's trying to shame us. And so looking at where, you know, where is shame in our bodies, in our hearts? When does it arise? And what's that about? Where was that seed planted, you know?
yes.
At a young age.
And sometimes it even comes in from doctrine and dogma and
yep.
religious practices and churches and belief systems. So there's all these pieces that we were raised with as children when we're so vulnerable and so open and trusting
right.
that when we absorb this information, it's taken in as truth. And so as we become adults and we start to open our eyes and we say, hey, that doesn't really fit with me now. And then that guilt comes in like, oh, you're denouncing what your faith is or your belief system or your religion or,
right.
you know, how, you know, so there's a lot of that churns up where, you know, we need to be gentler with ourselves. We need to learn to really, truly love ourselves.
Yeah.
And that, you know, that really comes in, you know, as you, it goes right back to that whole center of the solar plexus, because
yeah.
that's where we really learn our barometer of where we're at in the moment.
Mm-hmm. I mean, one of the things, for instance, with my staying up late was that I always wanted to eat in the evening.
Okay.
You know, and you know, I'm a woman of a certain age where eating in the evening is not possibly the best thing I want to do. But I started thinking about, because I guess what I was saying is sometimes these are from wounds, and sometimes they're actually, what I realized was that in the evening when I was growing up, because there was a lot of anxiety in the household and whatnot, I would sneak food. I would steal food from the kitchen and squirrel it away under my pillow and eat it in bed.
Okay.
As a kind of self-soothing.
Right.
That's what that is. That's a self-soothing.
Right.
There was a sense of being in my little nest and taking care of myself.
Right.
And so instead of kind of coming down on that, sort of going, you know, what incredible, and what we're talking about, we're talking a handful of peanuts here, literally, you know.
Right.
So, you know, in a sense, you have to give the child its due for finding a way to cope with these big energies in a household or in themselves that they don't know how to deal with. They don't have a lot of power, and they don't have to, in fact, they're being told they shouldn't be having these feelings at all, maybe.
Right.
You know, that we all learned how to self-soothe. And if we know that's what it is, then we need to find maybe healthier ways to self-soothe, you know, and maybe not. I mean, it depends whether it works and whether it has a cost to it, a kind of what I would call a hangover.
Right,
you
right.
know, and for me, there was a cost. If I stayed up late, I missed the time of the day, which for me is the most centering time. And the thing that opens me most to life is if I get up at 5:30 in the morning, I know that's hard to believe for some people, but
I respect you, boy, because I am not a 5:30 in the morning gal. Maybe 7, maybe 7:30 on a really good morning.
But, right. You know, I love it so much when I get, especially this time of year, because it is actually light at 5:30. And then you can watch the sun come up over the building. You know, I mean, I have a building, a landscape in front of me, so I get to watch it come up, and it's cooler, and it's just, it's quiet. The city hasn't woken up. And so I love, for me, that does it. And it's sort of also a level of self-acceptance of saying, I need to accept this about myself, that right now this really works for me.
Right.
And so, and not sabotage that, you know, or help myself not, or be at least curious about why I would sabotage something which really gives me such joy.
And how, where does laziness fall into this? Because oftentimes we get into a rut. I'm speaking of myself in regard to a pattern. Like we know, okay, this is great. This is healthy food. This is you know, healthy exercise, healthy lifestyle. All of a sudden, you know, laziness comes in. That Toll House cookie's calling. That, you know, steak sounds good.
So, you know, tell me what you mean by laziness.
Like falling off the wagon, so to speak, in regard to having a great practice, having a great regimen, having a great routine,
right.
And then all of a sudden something coming in and you're clenching that comfort food, or you're what, you know, needing to just kind of like fall off,
right.
Like, you know, fall off the wagon of healthy food, so to speak.
Yeah. Well, I think there are a couple things here. One is that I think laziness seems to say that we it just feels like too much effort.
Okay.
So we're back to efforting. When we use laziness, we mean we should be applying more efforting to the situation. And my sense is that, in fact, it's rarely laziness. Something else has come up that has made it difficult. Now, sometimes it's simply that we set things up in a difficult way for ourselves, and we can find an easier way to do it, right?
Right.
You know, we can set up whatever it is, you know, and we all know these little tricks. You know, you want to exercise, you arrange to go with a friend because that gets you rolling and it's good company and you have fun, you know, things
right.
like that. You don't get any extra points by doing it the hardest possible way. So one of the ways we sometimes sabotage ourselves is setting things up the most difficult way possible.
Right.
So the minute that something else arises that makes us want to go for what will kind of numb us to what's going on, is an easier route to take by far. The other thing is not to get too puritanical about these things. You know, the problem isn't the cookie; it's the bag of cookies.
Right.
You know,
or the size of the steak.
Right. Yeah. You know, it's so. I mean, I think there's lots of, and also what happens with you. I mean, some people. Physically can, I mean, I have a system that I can't wander too far away from what for me is healthy eating without getting a real kickback physically.
Right.
That's rarely going to feel worth it to me, quite frankly. Other people can. Other people can wander much further off, you know, and you know, come back, and it doesn't cost them something. So some of it is knowing ourselves and accepting what you really can and can't do, forgiving ourselves for, you know, sometimes doing something that does give us kickback and we knew it would, but we did it anyway. But it's
right.
also to look at what happened there. Like, why would I do something that would make me
mm-hmm.
feel worse ultimately? And some, you know, my experience is generally it's not laziness. It's because something arose in the day. Now, I mean, I work a lot with my dreams, and I look at them in the context of what happened the day before and whatnot, and what in my unconscious is going on. And sometimes it can be something so simple that will trigger anxiety. In other words, you know, we're all familiar. If, you know, I have two parents with Alzheimer's. If I suddenly get a phone call that one of them needs something and there's a crisis, of course I would anticipate that that's going to raise my anxiety, and I might want to, you know, stay up late tonight because my anxiety is high.
Right,
that
right.
makes sense. But that's not, those we usually kind of know, and sometimes we can actually be gentler with ourselves because we can see there are life circumstances beyond our control that are raising our anxiety. But it can also be somebody made a comment that day that landed in a spot of vulnerability, and we kind of thought we brushed it off, no big deal. You know, we're not even thinking about it. And hours later, we have an overwhelming urge to do what we know is going to give us a pretty bad, what I would call hangover, energetically or otherwise.
Right.
And if we can slow that down a little bit and stay with it, you know, and say what's going on, that's great. And sometimes we can't. And so sometimes we need to look at it in hindsight and say, what happened there? And see if we can feel our way into that. Now, if it's an isolated instance of, you know, that's what triggered it and we kind of know that. If it's the thing where every time I get together with this particular friend, I sabotage what I know really feeds me and I love, I need to start reconsidering either getting together with them or how maybe I need to get together for a shorter time or in the context of other people. You know, I need
right.
to sort of start looking for a way that works for me because it's not working.
Yes.
So the problem with lazy is that it's like the word wallowing or navel-gazing or narcissism.
Mm-hmm.
It partly
right.
is lazy in a positive sense. Once in a while in the summer, we can just say, you know, I'm going to kick back and be lazy. And that can have a positive connotation of real rest, actually.
Right, right.
You know, but it's more often carries a kind of judgmental.
I know. I was using it for dialogue here because I do choose my lazy days and I have no apologies for them and I
right.
come out of it, you know, in a day or two. And I usually have a lot of really good feelings and good times in it. So it's not really something I end up beating myself up on. But if I do overindulge on any level, whether it's food or too much laziness, you know, I do pay the price, whether it's, you know, emails
yeah.
I have to follow up on or clients or whatever. One thing that you brought up for me, and I am always reminding myself of this, and it came in on your meditation, and I find it such a simple tool and so very important and powerful, is you talk about the energy coming through the feet.
Mm-hmm.
And you had made a statement a year or two ago that has followed me ever since, and I find it so incredibly rewarding, that when we're in a stressful situation, to recognize the energy coming through our feet and releasing it. Can we talk a little bit about that? Because it's a really good tool.
It's amazing, actually.
It really is.
It's virtually impossible to feel simultaneously terrified and imagine breathing through the soles of your feet. Now, if you're really terrified, it could take you a little while to bring your attention to breathing through the soles of your feet. But once you do, things really start to drop down and become manageable. And by manageable, I mean just being able to be aware of them, not being driven by them 100%. So it's probably the simplest meditation I know. And originally I was taught it around, I was leading a lot of sweat lodge ceremonies, and they can be very intense. I mean, all of the lodge ceremonies I led, the way we did them was very intense. And they can also be hot, although whether or not you feel that is discomfort depends on what's going on internally. But when people would say they wanted to get out, and they were always free to do that, it was a protocol for doing that. You just didn't lunge for the door. But I would always say to them, do you want to try something first? And then, you know, I'll check with you in like 60 seconds if we want to try this, and then you can still get out. So I wanted to reassure them I wasn't trying to trick them into staying, and then the opportunity would be lost. And I would, and where I would start always was imagining them breathing the energy of the earth into them and breathing their own, whatever was going on, back down into the earth. And always saying, you know, to the earth, it's just energy. What we may feel as anxiety, as, you know, all this kind of what feels negative or could be labeled as negative, it's just energy.
Mm-hmm.
And breathing that back down into the earth. And 99% of the time, if I just talked people through that for 60 seconds and then said to them, how are you feeling now? Do you want to get out still, or do you want to wait and I'll check back with you after we do another round of prayers? 99% of the time people would say, no, I'm okay for now, and they would stay, which, of course, is part of my job, to help them stay with the ceremony if they can, but
mm-hmm.
not with, you know, extreme discomfort or anything like that. So there's a way in which it lowers a kind of fear that's not we're not talking here about see tiger, oh, I better run fear. That's a different kind of thing, but a kind of psychological fear that's arisen to a level where we can be with it.
Okay.
So it brings that energy down, and you can feel what happens if you just even imagine getting anxious and afraid. Of course, all of the energy goes up. I mean, our shoulders come up, our jaw tightens, our breath becomes shallow. And so part of this is that it just takes it all that energy that goes up in the body and brings it all the way down. It also connects us to the earth, this sort of huge, vast being, energy, that's always beneath us. Same earth here beneath me, beneath the parking lot outside my apartment building, as in the middle of the wilderness. And we forget that.
Right.
You know, it's easier, no doubt, for us to remember this in a natural setting. But many of us live in the middle of urban centers. Same
right.
earth, same mother beneath us, same grandmother holding us, you know. And that can just give us that sense, that wonderful sense, which, you know, hopefully when we have children, and especially when they're young, we give them. My younger son in particular, he's a sensate. So he would just insinuate his body into my lap. You know, it wouldn't matter how tired I was, if I sat down for a second, he would just find a way to get over there and get on my lap and just relax his whole body into me, right?
Oh.
I was his ground of being at that age, very small.
Right.
And our ground of being, in a literal sense, I mean, we've come from, we'll go back to all the elements that are held in this earth beneath us. And somehow that psyche just shifts right into that when we imagine simply inhaling and exhaling out the soles of our feet. It sounds crazy. I mean, we all know we're not breathing with our feet. But it works.
Oh, it so does.
It's incredible. Now, the other thing is, you know, when people, you know, we struggle with this whole idea of doing a spiritual practice of some sort. But I will often say to people, you know, if you start your day with simply a prayer of intention or gratitude, whatever's there for you, and, you know, just an expression of that, it could be silently, it could be with a pinch of tobacco to the ground, and breathe in and out the soles of your feet for 3 breaths, that's a good starting practice.
Yes.
And again, if we do that, let's say we just do that, the breathing in and out the soles of our feet as our feet hit the ground in the morning, we sit on the edge of our bed for a minute and do that, the odds of us thinking to do that later in the day when some anxiety or shock or whatnot occurs go up astronomically.
Yes.
That's where we'll go if we've been doing it each day. And that's the reason for a practice. It's just to make it available to us when we need it most.
And so powerful when we feel it. If I'm feeling stressed out, or I've had like an exhausting day with clients, or even just a moment of mothering, I will go barefoot in my backyard and I will
yeah.
just breathe. And it is immediate. It's an immediate grounding for me. It's an attitude adjustment. It's a free feeling of energy, and it's such a simple tool and so very powerful. It's amazing. You know, there's a lot of laughter and a lot of jokes about tree huggers, but, you know, mm-hmm. there's an energy and there's a pulse that exists in our nature, and if mm-hmm. we can just harness that from ourselves with the universe, it's such a powerful tool. It's
yeah.
at our ready, you know. It's
yeah.
it's right there.
And what's a great thing to do, I mean, is to hug a tree and do that same breathing, so the energy goes through your feet and down by the roots of the tree. And the other, if you're, you know, a little cautious about hugging trees in public places, is just to stand, you know, lean with your back against the tree or sit at the base of the tree.
Yes.
Which, you know, most of us live in places where there are parks and trees where we can do that. Even that can just strengthen that sense, which I think is the reality of really being held
yes.
with some tenderness, with some mercy, with what all that we need right there. Now, what's interesting is why we wouldn't do it. See, I'm getting Miss Curious. Why would we not do that? When we
right.
do it and it works, why would we not go there, you know? And it's usually because we become fairly frantic and discovered that we're afraid we won't do what the small self has convinced we have to do to survive. And I get why. You know, I have people who work with me, and they will complain and say, you know, we do this thing together, and then I don't do my list of things for the day. And you know, there's a point there where you have to understand that you may live your life differently. And
yes.
I think people do know this on some level. If there are things you are avoiding, if there's work you're doing that is really an insult to your soul, if there are relationships you are in that are truly toxic for you,
mm-hmm.
The reason we don't go to this place is because we're not going to keep running one step ahead of that knowing if we stop and do that breathing.
That's right. There's the little bit of fear that's hiding there in addressing that.
Yeah. I mean, I once did a ceremony with a group of women. It was incredible, actually, where we did a descent of Inanna into the underworld. And we actually did this outside in a natural area where we had men who were helping us who were the guardians at the seven gates. And you had to surrender aspects of your identity that you held and cherished as being a certain way.
Wow.
And as we just went to do it, we were kind of doing the meditation to prepare for this, you could feel in this room... somebody said to me, if I do this, if I let go of being my ideal of the good wife, how do I know I'll stay in my marriage? And I said, you don't. But we do this for freedom, so you would stay there by choice. And she said, I don't think so. And a friend of mine said, at the time, she said, people don't want freedom.
Yeah.
Now, I don't think that's true. I think we might be afraid of freedom. But I think
right.
our soul really does want freedom to be
right.
who it is and has some real faith that we can be who we are. But, you know, it's reasonable, it's not unreasonable to get frightened about not knowing what changes that might bring in your life.
And I think that fear comes from what is the parallel of what you've been living, because there's people who fear commitment and there's people
mm-hmm.
who fear being alone.
Absolutely.
You know, it depends on what you're comfortable with and what you've known for an extended period of time, that's the lifestyle you've lived. And, oh, dear God, you mean change? You
right.
know, change what I've been doing and feeling comfortable with? What if I like this, you know?
Yeah.
Yes,
but you see, if you like it, you can choose it, which is what I was saying to this woman. She said,
right.
How do I know I'll stay there? And I'm saying, well, you'll know that if you're there, it's by choice. She
right.
was afraid that if she was given the choice, she
well,
might
she
walk
probably
away.
Knew. She probably knew on some innate
yeah.
level.
Well,
I'm
yeah.
not really happy here.
You don't ask that question. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm looking for someone to tell me it's okay to go.
Yeah.
Yeah. But you know, this is there's such power with intention, and that's the basis of. You know, what soul summer solstice is it's the intention of what we're putting forth in this energy. And when you had provided us with that incredible meditation, you really allowed us to go within. And it was a very centering meditation that you provided for us. It was a very whole meditation. And it was certainly not long enough as far as I'm concerned.
No, it could make it much, much longer. I do want to say this. You know, even as I recall that ceremony and the woman's question and whatnot, I'm overwhelmed with a sort of feeling of tenderness. It takes an enormous amount of courage to live a human life fully.
Yes.
As awake as we're able to in the moment, as deeply as we're able to, with tenderness, with curiosity, with mercy to ourselves and others, takes enormous courage.
Right.
And I think we need to acknowledge that in ourselves. You know, as I think about this woman asking this question and her fear, we all have. I mean, I don't have that about being alone, but I have it about other things. We all have places where we're terrified we're going to do something that will destroy what little security we may be feeling, you know?
Yes.
And to take that risk, it just takes tremendous courage. And I think part of what we're talking about here, even in, you know, drawing into ourselves that sense of that fire and building that, is we need encouragement. We
mm-hmm.
need to encourage ourselves and each other. You know, somebody the other day said to me, well, you know, you could get your message out there. And I'm always a little mystified when people say this, because I don't feel like I've got a message. And I always want to say, what do you think my message is? But if I had a purpose, if I had to succinctly put my purpose, it would be to encourage us. to help us, and of course courage comes from cœur, the French word for heart, to help us have the heart to live in the face of life's challenges and losses, and that's just what is. These are going to be losses. There are going to be things that bring us to our knees in life if we live long enough. And so to have the courage to crumble, to have the courage to lean into somebody else's face, to let something larger find us and lift us, to keep breathing. Sometimes it takes courage to take the next breath and the next breath, and to really be content, in a sense, with, in this moment maybe, breathing is enough.
Yes, yes,
you know?
And be gentle with yourself. You know, you Oriah, are involved with such a heart space with just your personal life in dealing with both your parents, and such an incredible gift and teacher you are for all of us in regard to walking your truth and speaking from the heart and just being real. And I really want to honor that and make that statement, because your authenticity is something that I truly value and honor. And I see you as such a light and such a truth. And you speak that message. You give that message. You just, in your essence, in your being, you are that message. And you help all of us to be gentle with ourselves. And that power that you have, and that insight and that wisdom, is something that's just, it oozes from you. So it's not something you have to try to do or be or say. It just is. And so I really, you know, I honor where you are and what you're going through and how truthful you walk your talk and your teachings and your wisdom. And just thank you for your gifts that you give all of us. I wanted to acknowledge that.
Thank you. I say what I need to hear.
Yeah, well,
all
you,
the
you
time,
know,
you know,
you
like
are,
I,
and you're,
yeah.
You walk your talk. You are truth, and I just, there's when there is such a gifted teacher like you, there needs to be an honoring of that, and so I honor you. I bow to you. Thank you.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Oriah, this has been a wonderful, wonderful show. Such wisdom you give all of us. Where can our listeners find you? You are writing a new book, The Choice, and you have the invitation out. And I see that you have also some YouTube videos out in regard to your book.
I don't, actually.
Okay.
Other people have whipped those together.
Okay. Well, good. The more the merrier.
People can go to my website, which is just Oriah, Oriah.org. And, of course, I'm on Facebook as Oriah Mountain Dreamer, where there's always some wonderful conversation. It's been such a gift to me, that community. And I love to hear from people.
Wonderful, wonderful. Now, in wrapping up the show, what would you like to share with our listeners for our closing moment here? Would you like to, we have about 2 minutes, so we could do a intention focus, or you can...
Sure, why don't we just go back to breathing through the soles of our feet for a moment.
Amen, I'm all for that.
And just allowing, whether you've got shoes on it or you're in a building, it doesn't matter. Just breathing into the soles of the feet, imagining with the inhale the energy of the earth coming up to the heart, and breathing in kindness, breathing out any tension or tiredness. It's just energy to the earth. Breathing in curiosity, gentle curiosity. Breathing out any kind of fear. And breathing in encouragement. Breathing in courage, encouragement from the earth to us and back down to her. Just letting our hearts be filled with kindness, curiosity, and encouragement, that we may be fully human, fully here, gently with each other.
such a wonderful, peaceful feeling you provide. Thank you so much, Araya. And thank you so much for being my guest today. This has been such a blessing to share for all our listeners.
Thank you, God, Lisa. It's been a real pleasure.
You're welcome, Araya. God bless you, and thank you again so much. God bless all of you. Have a wonderful week. I'm not sure who's going to be on next week because it's going to be a rerun. So God bless everybody. Have a great week. Take care. Thank you again, Araya. God bless.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.